Today's teshel will be on case 32 in the Blue Rock collection, the Haikigan Roku, Hiyen Nu. The case 32 is Jo Joza stands still. Engo's introduction. Once the delusive way of thinking is cut off, a thousand eyes are suddenly opened. One word blocking the stream of thought, and all nen actions are controlled. Is there anyone who would undergo the experience of dying the same death and living the same life as the Buddha? Truth is manifest everywhere. If you do not see it, here is an ancient example. See the following. Main subject. Jo Joza asked Rinzai, what is the essence of Buddhism? Rinzai, getting up from his seat, seized him, slapped him, and pushed him away. Jo Joza stood still. A monk standing by said, Jo Joza, why don't you bow? When Jo Joza bowed, he suddenly became enlightened. Secho's verse. Inheriting the spirit of Dansai, how could he be gentle and quiet? Not difficult for Kyore to lift his hands and split Mount Kasan, letting the yellow river run through. I want to thank everybody for coming here to practice today on this beautiful winter day. And thank you all for making such a good effort this morning and sitting so still and in such deep samadhi. So it's a great pleasure to practice with each of you. So thank you very much for coming. This koan involves, this koan has many aspects. One of the aspects I wanted to look at today was the action of Rinzai. As some of you may be aware, we are not just practicing Zen, but we're practicing Rinzai Zen. And you might not really appreciate the method of Rinzai Zen. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about it today, just so you can understand a little better what we're doing, and then you can forget all about it and pretend that we never had this teisho. So, you know, first of all, I want to say that I don't think that Linji Zen or Rinzai Zen is the highest form of Buddhist practice. There is no such thing as the highest form of Buddhist practice, or even the highest form of practice. I'm not in favor of what you could call sectarianism. Recently, I went to a temple with some members of our group, and one of the monks at the temple was a Theravada monk. And he was what you could call almost like a Buddhist fundamentalist, you know? In other words, he studied the sutras, the early Pali sutras, and he had a very clear understanding, based on his study of the sutras, of what Buddhism was and wasn't, and what it could be, and what it should be, and what it couldn't be, and what it shouldn't be. And he had a very big chip on his shoulder when it comes to Zen. I had the feeling he didn't think Zen was really Buddhism. And he wasn't actually totally rude to me, but he wasn't that friendly either, you know. And I've seen this many times in my life in all kinds of contexts. It's especially sad in the context of Buddhist practice, where you wouldn't expect it, but even there I've encountered it. So this monk had an opinion about Zen that was formed I don't know how. And his idea was that his path was superior. Now, you know, my own teacher, Genki Roshi, was a wonderful human being. My shifu, Genki Roshi, was just Takabayashi Genki, was a wonderful person, really kind, extraordinarily good-hearted person, and patient, and the perfect teacher in almost every way. And my second teacher was also very kind, and in fact, they used to work together. They taught together for a number of years, but finally they had to have a Dharma divorce, I'm afraid, because they just couldn't teach together anymore. One of the things that drove my second teacher, Kangan, crazy about Genki was that Genki was very sectarian. So Genki had this idea that only Zen, only Rinzai Zen is real, true Buddhist practice, you know. And he would actually talk about this in his teishos. So one time he told the story of a Japanese general who was going to go out into battle one day, or rather he was going to go out into battle the following day. And he knew he was probably going to be defeated. And so he decided to do meditation. He decided to do some zazen to prepare himself for death. And thinking that death was soon to occur, he threw himself into his zazen practice. And overnight, he sat all night long, not moving. And as morning arose, he had a great awakening experience, or an awakening, a kensho experience. And before he had to go off to battle, he wanted to know what had happened to him. So he went to the local temple, which was a Soto temple. And Genki Roshi was telling this story, and when he told the story, he said, the general had a kensho experience, and then he went to the local temple, but it was a Soto temple. Mm-hmm. And he said, Soto is the other school of Zen. So there's Linji and Zaotong, Soto in Japanese. So he said, the general went to the local temple, but it was a Soto temple. And Genki said in Japanese, they don't know anything about enlightenment. So then he went to see Hakuin Zenji, the great Rinzai teacher. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, everything was explained by the great Hakuin Zenji. So Webb, when he was translating this, it just drove him crazy to hear this, because some of his best friends were Soto masters. So he wouldn't translate it. Genki had said in Japanese, he went to the temple, it was a Soto temple, and they don't know anything about enlightenment. And Webb would translate it as, he went to the temple, but the abbot wasn't there, right? and so, basically, he covered it up, you know. But Genki was very sectarian, only this way, you know. That was a character flaw in him, because the Buddha himself did not teach just one path of meditation. If you read the Pali Sutras, the earliest sutras of the Buddha, he offers a number of different kinds of meditation practices. One of the meditation practices is basically meditation on emptiness. And he starts with the breath, and he works with meditation on emptiness, and that's actually the form of meditation he used when he had his own Daikensho. However, he also teaches forms of meditation like a Vipassana, or being aware of body sensation. He teaches meditation on loving kindness, and a number of other forms of meditation on the body as impermanent, So he, if you read the sutras, he has quite a grab bag of meditation strategies. And my feeling is that he taught meditation strategies that were appropriate to different people. So the point is, if anybody ever speaks of your practice as an inferior vehicle, whatever you do, don't get angry, just ignore it. And have confidence in what works for you. And if anybody speaks of a Rinzai as a superior vehicle, that's also an illusion, and just ignore it and go on with your practice. You know, those kinds of considerations are unworthy of people who are really on the path. And so when I meet people from the Tibetan tradition, I think of them as my brothers and sisters. When I meet people from the Theravada tradition, I think of them as my brothers and sisters. And even though I love Genki Roshi, when I meet people from the Soto tradition, I think of them as my brothers and sisters. But all the same, it's important to know what, you know, there is something distinctive about Rinzai Zen. And it has a particular approach. You know, the Soto and the Rinzai schools are both came out of India originally. Probably Zen went to India without splitting in two this way. There were many different forms of Buddhist meditation in India. And when Bodhidharma came to China, he really taught meditation on emptiness. But after Zen began to flourish in China, different schools of practice developed. And maybe this was already, maybe both of these schools were part of Bodhidharma's teaching, and maybe not. But the thing is, Soto Zen in America is the majority of Zen temples in America are Soto, Zhao Tong temples. And it's been very, very successful in the United States. It got here first, it had many talented teachers, and their method is basically, they use koans now, but originally Soto Zen really practiced a kind of vipassana. So you sit on the cushion, you watch your breath, and then you just become aware primarily your body. So Soto people put a tremendous emphasis on sitting correctly. It's almost, from my standpoint, almost insane, right? Your posture has to be absolutely perfect. And they want you to worry about your posture. You know, so when you're sitting on the cushion, you have to be totally balanced, back has to be totally straight, head has to be totally straight, shoulders, and they're very fussy. You know, the person who's leading the meditation practice will go around and straighten everybody up and make sure you're absolutely, Soto people, when you see them meditate, they take their hands. We Rinzai people just fold our hands up in a little ball, but they hold their hands in an oval. They put their thumbs together and their index fingers together to make like an egg. And they hold this egg in their lap, so to speak. And so, and the egg has to be a real egg. You can't let it collapse, you know. So you have to hold your hands just right, you know. So this practice is really very good because, you know, people sit there and they're trying to keep their posture perfect, and they're sort of worried about their posture, and they're sort of monitoring their body from moment to moment. This is pure Soto. This is actually Vipassana. This is pure awareness of body. This is one of the forms of meditation that the Buddha taught. And in pure Vipassana, you don't worry so much about your posture. That wasn't part of what the Buddha was interested in. But he was interested in being aware of sensation. As you're sitting, you might feel your heart beating. So you're aware of your heart beating, or you're aware of the need to swallow, or you're aware that your hands feel cold, or you're aware that your left leg is getting numb, or you're aware. And pure Vipassana is just noting the body sensations from moment to moment. So your mind has to be calm and stable, but once it's calm and stable, you just note the body sensations from moment to moment. And this is one of the earliest forms of meditation the Buddha taught. So you could think of Soto as really going back to the roots. Soto sort of went back to very elementary practice of body awareness. And the distinctive element of Japanese Soto is this great attention to making sure the posture is perfect. And Soto teachers always say, you know, when you sit down on the cushion, you should be Buddha in your body. So you don't think you're getting ready to be Buddha. When your posture is correct, you become the Buddha. You know, so there's this great emphasis on posture and body awareness, and just being in the moment from moment to moment and trying to harmonize yourself with what's actually happening. So this is a as I say, a pure early Buddhist practice, which is was transferred over to China and then went into Japan and has come to the United States, and it's quite successful. This works very well for many people. Rinzai Zen is a little different. You know, one way to think about, let me just go back one step to Soto. One way to think about Soto is that it works like this. If you clean up your mental habits, eventually you will have an awakening experience, see? So if you just sit on the cushion and you watch your posture and you're aware of your body and you keep being attentive to what's happening in the moment, little by little your mind is going to return to its natural state and you will have a Kensho experience on the cushion. So all of this attempt to practice with the body posture and cultivate awareness of body, all of this is kind of like cleaning up your karma. It's cleaning up your karma. And indeed, if you're sitting on the cushion and you're worried about your posture and you're thinking, is my back straight? Is my egg collapsing? You know, and so on. You aren't thinking about all the other things. You aren't thinking about the TV show you saw last night. You aren't thinking. A beautiful expression of the Soto practice form is the book Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. If you read that very beautiful short little book, you know, he never talks about koans at all. He never talks about enlightenment. He just talks about being in the moment. And he says, you know, when we're in the moment, this is what happens. You know, so it's a very beautiful statement of the Tsao Tung, the Soto approach. I hope I'm being a little bit clear about this. It's centered on awareness of body, awareness of moment, and constantly pulling away from your thoughts back to the present, back to the moment. This is a Zen form of Vipassana. Now, Rinzai Zen is a little bit different, because instead of saying let's clean up karma and then we'll have an enlightenment experience, Rinzai Zen says let's have an enlightenment experience and clean up karma. So it's a little different approach. You know, one way to understand the Rinzai approach is to think about these terms, which are guest and host. Guest and host. Everybody understands what it's like to be a guest, right? You know, you're going to go to somebody's house, and you're going to stay there, and they're going to take care of you. So if your room is cold and you're staying at, say, a relative's house and you're a guest, you can go downstairs and say, you know, my room is cold. And they're the host, right? So their job is to run upstairs and make sure the room is warm or get you another blanket or something like that. So you know, the relationship between guest and host is pretty clear. Yeah. Now, you know, consciousness also is a little bit like this. And here's what I mean. Usually, people are in, ordinarily, people are in what you might call guest mind. And guest mind is where you're worried about things and you're asking life to take care of you. Yeah? So, guest mind is, you know, many of you don't yet own a house. And you might think it would be wonderful to own a house instead of owning an apartment. You know, I used to have an apartment. My wife and I used to have an apartment in Highland Park. And, you know, if the heater would go out, we'd have to call the landlord, and it was such a pain. You know, you'd call the landlord, and he wouldn't come over, and he wouldn't come over, and you'd call him and go, please come over, and he'd finally come over, and he wouldn't hire a repairman. He'd sit down there and try to fix it himself because he was so cheap, you know. And we would think, oh, come on, just go call the repairman. No, I'll get it, you know. So we just thought, one day we're going to own a house and we're never going to have to put up with landlords again, you know. But when you buy your house, it's actually terrible, because now if the furnace breaks, you don't get on the phone and say to your landlord, please fix this. You have to call the company and they come over and then they hand you a gigantic bill and you have to pay it. And suddenly you think, oh, it was so nice to be a tenant, you know? So you might lie awake at night and think, how am I going to pay that bill? You know, I just don't know. Or you might think, I've got this chemistry test coming up. I've got to get an A on this test or I can't get to medical school. All my dreams will be gone, you know. This is guest thinking. It's like you're thinking in your little world, right? Your little world, right? But every once in a while, we stop thinking that way. We stop thinking about me, and we stop thinking about how to make me happy, and so on, how to take care of me and fulfill my. And we get connected to like a bigger mind. It happens to everybody all the time, you know, or it happens to everybody sometimes, I should say. So, you know, when I was in graduate school, my first couple of years of graduate school, I was having such a hard time. It was so difficult. I was not well prepared, and it was very competitive. And I was always in my guest mind, worrying and worrying. And I remember one day my wife said to me, look, you're not accomplishing anything today, you know, why don't you come with me and we'll go to the zoo, right? And I hadn't been to the zoo since I was like 10 years old, you know. But I thought, why not, let's go to the zoo, okay. And my wife dragged me to the zoo. And I was walking around the zoo thinking, oh man, you know, I've got to get an A on that paper, or I'm not going to stay in graduate school, and they think I'm an idiot, and blah blah blah. And we walked next to the lions' cages, and all of a sudden, the lions just started roaring, and it was just like astonishing to me. Literally, I think I had goosebumps, and the hairs on my head stood up. It was like the voice of nature, you know. And it just blew away all my cares. For just a minute, I was like one with the universe, you know? And this would also happen to me sometimes. I'd be on my way to school in Seattle, where I was going to school. There's a huge mountain that looks like Mount Fuji or something. It's called Mount Rainier. It's gigantic. And you can't always see it because Seattle's covered with clouds. But every once in a while, I'd be getting up and thinking, oh, I've got to go teach my class. I've got that paper that Professor Dunn has to get, and I think I've got to finish that. Be worried. And I'd go outside and open the door and start walking down the street and look up and see this gigantic mountain floating in the sky. And again, it's just like, boom. All of your fears, all of your worries are gone, and you feel connected to life. See? Now, when you're in that state of mind, that's host mind. See, host mind. So a lot of the time we're in this worried, fearful little mind, But every once in a while, everybody has this experience where you enter post-mind, and you feel eternal and immortal. Maybe it's just for a few seconds, and you feel totally connected, and you trust everything, yeah? I'm sure you've had an experience like this. Even on vacation, people have a host mind sometime, you know? You have all these details at your job, all these worries, then you get on the plane and you go somewhere and you think, oh, what the heck? It doesn't matter. I'm not going to answer my phone. I'm not going to look at my BlackBerry. I don't actually own a BlackBerry and I don't even know how they work. But I imagine you have to look at them, though. So that's host mind. So Lin Ji, his way of practicing is a little different from Soto, a little different from you. What you do is you use your obstacles, you use your fears and your contradictions in life to switch into from guest mind to host mind. See, guest mind to host mind. And that's why koans are so important, because koans are these very difficult, they point to things about life that are just contradictory. You know, there's no way to live a smooth life. You know, there's no way. There's just absolutely no way. If you own an apartment, you think, the day I own a house, I'm through with this crazy landlord, I'm through with these noisy neighbors, you know. And then you own a house, and what do you know? Your neighbors are noisy, you know. And as I say, you know, you have these bills that pile up, and you have to pay them instead of sending in your usual rent check, you know. So one day your furnace breaks, and you don't call the landlord and go, come over here. You say, that'll be how much? $6,000? Okay, you know. So it doesn't look so great. So whether you have an apartment or whether you have a house, it's not going to be easy. There are going to be contradictions. You're going to lie awake at night and worry, yeah? If you live in your little mind, if you live in your small mind or your guest mind. So you know, actually, these problems are very good for us, you know? They're very good, even though we hate them, you know? Because you can just be miserable and in your guest mind, and you can be cranky, and you can feel that your life is not a good host to you, you know. You can feel sorry for yourself or angry. And if you go to a hotel you don't like, you know, you can just say, I'll never come back to this hotel. But the hotel of life, you know, you're stuck in it, you know. So this is actually very good. Rinzai thought, this is actually very good to work with these problems. Because, you know, if you sit in your small mind long enough, and you get unhappy enough, you sit on the cushion. You might just come to do zazen. And if you do zazen and you're worried about your problems, sooner or later there's going to be like a change. You're going to fall into big mind, into host mind. It'll just happen. This is what koan training is all about. You know, so if somebody gives you a koan, it's, you know, what is the sound of one hand clapping? See? And at first you think, oh, well, that's a crazy question, you know. What do I care? You know, I'll give it a try. But then you spend 3 years of your life on it, right? So you get up every day for 3 years and you sit there and go, one hand clapping, one hand clapping, one hand clapping. And you know, that's a lot of time to invest in something that isn't going to pan out, you know. And so you begin to feel like, boy, if this goes on another year, what am I going to do? I've got to answer this koan. And then you think, maybe I'll never wake up. You know, maybe I'm one of these people who are destined to just live in misery forever. You know, I'll never have Kensho experience, you know. And then you think about all the other things that you've never achieved in your life and so you know, whatever. You know how the mind works. And so little by little, you become maybe unhappier and unhappier about this, and more desperate to answer your koan. And of course, in your desperation, you're just totally in guest mind. And in your fears and your anxieties and your sense of inferiority and whatever, you know, you're in your guest mind. and you sit there and guess mind, and it gets worse and worse and worse and worse, and then all of a sudden it's like somebody switches the switch, and your whole world is different. It's like going to the zoo and hearing the lions roar. And suddenly you're in the big mind, you're in host mind, see? And this happens to people who do Zen over and over and over again. It can be very subtle, very, very subtle, you know? You sit on the cushion, you come in to do your Zazen, you've had a busy day, maybe something's bothering you. You sit on the cushion and you're sitting there thinking, oh man, this is terrible, you know, my back aches, my legs hurt. And what am I going to do about that? What am I going to do about that bill? I've got to pay that bill. And then you think, oh yeah, and there's this stupid koan. What was that? One hand clapping. Oh, I hate this thing, you know. One hand clapping. Oh, damn it, I hate it. And then all of a sudden, boom. It's like everything is so beautiful, so alive. You know, this happens to people. Somebody came up to me after a sit just the other day and said, oh, I've been struggling for weeks, and all of a sudden I had this incredible sit. See, that's, now you're in host mind, see? So this is like the Rinzai method. It uses guest mind and host mind to help people wake up, you know? And koans are essential because they point us to inescapable contradictions. You know, life is inescapably contradictory. Yeah, there's just no such thing as a perfect world in the little mind. Everything's perfect to big mind, but little mind has very demanding expectations, you know. So, you know, no matter what you do, it's going to be unsatisfactory to little mind. Well, I wanted to read you something. This is a story from the Linji Lu, Rinzai Roku. These are the teachings of Master Rinzai himself. And this is a record of Rinzai's Daikensho experience. When the master was first in Wang Bo's group, he went about his activities in an earnest and straightforward manner. The head monk expressed admiration, saying, though he's still young, he's rather unusual. Then he asked, how long have you been here? 3 years, said Rinzai. The head monk said, have you been into Dokusan with the teacher yet? Rinzai said, no, I haven't been into Dokusan. I don't know how to ask the teacher. The head monk said, why don't you go to the reverend who heads this temple and ask him, what is the real basic meaning of the Buddha Dharma? Rinzai went and asked, but before he had even finished speaking, Huang Bo slapped him, right? Didn't even get it out of his mouth. What's the basic meaning of the... Okay. When Rinzai returned from the interview, the head monk said, how did it go? Rinzai said, oh, man, before I'd even finished the question, he struck me. I don't understand. The head monk said, well, look, go and ask him again. Rinzai went and asked again, and again, Wang Bo hit him. In this way, he went 3 times to ask his question, and he was hit 3 times. Rinzai came to report to the head monk, thanks to your instruction, I've been able to question the reverend. 3 times I've questioned him, and 3 times he struck me. To my great regret, I'm impeded by my bad karma, and I can't grasp the profound meaning in all of this. Now I'm going on my way. I'm out of here, man. See, now, do you recognize that voice? See? To my great regret, I'm impeded by my bad karma, and I can't grasp the profound meaning in all of this. Now I'm going to quit. I'm leaving here. See, That's guest mind, yes? That means this is a lousy hotel. The soap is no good. The towels are dirty. It's okay. The head monk said, okay, if you're going, that's okay, but be sure to take leave of Wang Bo. So the master, Rinzai, bowed low and he withdrew. The head monk went to see Wang Bo before Rinzai could do so and said, that young monk who came to question you has a lot of good insight. I hope you'll help him along. Later, I'm sure he'll shape up to be a fine big tree that will make cool shade for the people of this world. He's a little acorn now, but he'll grow into a mighty oak that shelters living beings. That's the bodhisattva. So when Rinzai came to take his leave, Wang Bo said, okay, you can leave, but before you do that, go to see Ta Yu. Go to his temple. It's by the rapids in Kao'an. He will surely explain things to you better than I can. So when Rinzai arrived at Ta Yu's place, Ta Yu asked, where have you come from? Rinzai said, I've come from Wang Bo's place. Ta Yu said, did Wang Bo have any words or phrases to teach you? Rinzai said, I asked him three times, what is the real basic meaning of the Buddha Dharma? And three times I was struck. I don't know whether I did something wrong or not. And then Ta Yu said, Wang Bo is such a kind old grandmother. Wearing himself out on your account, and then you come here and ask whether you did something wrong or not. He said, he basically said, Wang Bo loves you. Wang Bo is all love. See, you can't do anything wrong in Wang Bo's eyes because Wang Bo is love itself. See, that's one way of understanding this. So, right and wrong, that's a little mind. In big mind, it's just all beautiful world. It's just all for the host, everyone is a valued guest. See, the host loves all the guests. The host loves all the guests. So he kind of says, look, you thought he was mad at you. He loves you. See, you thought you were unworthy of love. But you yourself are all love. See, it doesn't quite put it this way, but this is kind of what he's getting at. He says, Wang Bo is such a kind old grandmother wearing himself out on your account, and then you come here and you think you've done something wrong. But these words, Rinzai experienced great awakening. See, when he encounters big mind, it blows away all his obstacles. And he said, well, there wasn't anything so hard about Wang Bo's teaching after all. Ta Yu seized him and said, you little bedwetting devil. A minute ago, you were afraid you did something wrong, and now you have no obstacles at all. So he's really saying, when somebody insults you in Zen, it's saying good work. Okay? So little bedwetting devil means you've had a great awakening experience. That's wonderful. He says, so, a few minutes ago you felt totally unworthy of your existence, and now you feel like God. Yeah? What a difference. Yeah? What a difference. So what kind of truth do you think you've encountered? Out with it. Out with it. And then Rinzai punched Ta Yu three times in the ribs. He said, I'll give you the truth. Okay. Ta Yu let go of him and said, wonderful. Your real teacher is Wang Bo. You need to go back to him. Okay, so Rinzai took his leave of Ta Yu and returned to Wang Bo. When Wang Bo saw him coming, he said, this guy, he's coming and going, coming and going. Will it ever end? The master said, Ah, I'm coming and going. Do you know why? It's all because of your grandmotherly kindness. And then when he finished the customary greetings, he went and stood in attendance by Wang Bo. Wang Bo said, "Where have you been?" The master said, "Following your instructions, the other day I went to Ta Yu." Wang Bo said, "Did Ta Yu have any words or phrases for you?" The master then related the conversation that had taken place between Ta Yu and himself. Wang Bo said, "If only I could get my hands on Ta Yu, I'd give him a good wallop." The master said, "What's that you say you'll do? You can have a wallop right now." And he gave Wang Bo a slap right in the face. Wang Bo said, "This raving idiot coming back here and pulling the tiger's whiskers." The master gave a shout. Wang Bo said, "Attendant, drag this raving idiot out of here. Take him back to the monk's hall." Different style. So, this is the essence of our practice. You know, we learn how to be a person, human being, and we learn how to be, in growing up, we learn how to be a human being. We learn how to answer to a name. Somebody tells us one day, "You're a boy." Somebody tells us one day, "You're a girl." Somebody tells us one day, "You're smart." Somebody tells us, you know, one day, "You're stupid." And you know, as we grow up, we learn to be little. You know, we learn how to be a guest. And we learn how to worry. See, we have to be taught how to worry, you know. And basically, our parents love us, and they want the very best for us. But they without necessarily meaning to, they kind of say to us, they don't mean to, but society kind of says to us, "Look, we don't give out love for free around here. You know, you have to get good grades, you have to do this, you have to do that, or you're just an unlovable person. You know, nobody wants to be an unlovable person." And so basically, we learn how to worry. And we lie in bed at night and think, "Oh my God, you know, what if I don't get into medical school?" And you could say to somebody who's worried about that, "Are you worried because you really want to be a doctor? Or are you worried because you don't want to be unloved? You don't want to be unworthy?" And you know, it is true. We all want to be doctors or whatever, but a lot of our fear is really not about that. It's this basic feeling that we're just really totally unworthy, you know. It's not very nice to be a guest, you know, because life is never the way we want it, and we don't feel we're really wanted. We don't really feel that the host really wants us here anyway. And so we go through our whole life learning how to be small, and learning how to worry, and learning how to be angry and resentful and self-despising and so on. But every once in a while, you know, it's possible to encounter different consciousness. You know, and even in the midst of our failure and in the midst of our anxieties, you know, sometimes those can push us into this other state of mind, into this other frame. And you just let it all go, and suddenly it's like a lan qian, blue sky. Your mind becomes like the blue sky, no obstructions. You know, and this is kensho. See, so in Zen training, in Rinzai training, you don't just go along in ignorance for 20 years and then you have this big experience, boom. You know, you're in little mind, and you sit on the cushion, and you sit on the cushion, and you sit on the cushion, and you enter big mind. And then, you know, you get off the cushion and you go back and you start worrying again, and you're afraid or you're angry or whatever, and then you get back on the cushion and you enter big mind. And little by little, you spend less and less time with the guest or as the guest, and you spend more and more time with the host. And, you know, it takes a lot of sitting. But if you sit there long enough, you fall into a host mind, and it's just the most wonderful thing in the world. And eventually, you know, you stop identifying with your little mind, and your true home becomes your big mind. And you stop worrying about being worthy of love, yeah? Because you realize, you know, you really are love itself. That's your true nature. So anyway, this is the Rinzai path. For some reason, your life brought you here, and maybe you're enjoying yourself in your Zen practice. And this is our Rinzai way. Jojo Za, by the way, is a senior monk. He's been at the temple where Rinzai is. Maybe this is Rinzai's temple. Been at the temple sitting for 20 years and hasn't had Daikensho. He can't get out of the little mind, or he hasn't been able to. And so Jojo Za is a very good man, and he goes to Rinzai and he says, "Look, what's the essence of Buddhism? I've been sitting for 20 years, I'm a senior monk, and I still haven't wakened up." So Rinzai, getting up, you know, Jojo Za goes to Rinzai in like a public Dokusan setting, and he says, "What's the essence of Buddhism?" Rinzai jumps up from his seat, seizes him, slaps him, right, and pushes him away. This is like saying, you know, basically, you're utterly unworthy, right? You utter idiot, right? It's the worst thing, right? I mean, if you go in for a job interview and you say, you know, "Hello, you know, I've got this Rutgers degree, you know, I've done these jobs. What do you think?" You know, and the guy, you know, slaps you. This is like a nightmare, right? Okay. So this is like the worst thing that could happen to this guy. It's like he's a total unlovability, right? And Jojo's mind is frozen in Mushin. And a monk standing by said, "Jojo Za, why don't you bow?" And at that moment, Jojo Za, it's like calling Mu. You know, you call Mu 1,000 times, and you go into the teacher and go, "Mu, Mu, 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 Mu." And you think, "What an idiot I am. I'll never do this. You know, I hate myself. You know, this is ridiculous. I hate my teacher, you know. I hate Zen, blah, blah, blah." And then one day you go in, and it's like you're in the groove, right? It's like it's perfectly natural. It comes out of you like a bird's song comes out of a bird, you know? It's so wonderful. It's like, where did that come from? How did I do that? You know, I didn't think that was in me. You know, when people have Daikensho, they're always amazed, because it's like encountering in yourself like pure love, pure compassion. People always, it's like, "That was in me? You know, I thought that was in heaven. You know, I thought that was in heaven." You see, but guest and host are really the same. The guest isn't in heaven, the host isn't in heaven. You know, both right here, both the same being, both you. So, you know, the beautiful thing about life is that when you encounter the host, you can enjoy being the guest. See, that's one of the most wonderful things. When you encounter the host, then it's wonderful to be a guest. See, because you're wonderful. Hope I'm probably not making any sense at all right now, but one last thing. People don't really understand Buddhism very well. You know, they don't understand what it's all about, and they don't understand it. You know, this is all about living life in the fullest possible way. There's an early Buddhist sutra where the Buddha, a Brahmin, a priest, went to see the Buddha, And he said, listen, he said, do you bathe in the, wasn't the Ganges? He said, do you, he said, the river Bahuka. Is there such a river? I don't know. In the sutra, somebody came up and he went, Venerable Gautama, the river Bahuka is if you bathe in the river, it'll purify your sins. You know, have you bathed in the river? And the Buddha said, look, brother, you can bathe in that river from now until the end of time, but it's not going to do anything. And that's a classic Buddha statement, by the way. He said, what you have to purify is your body, mind, and heart. And the river can't do that for you, right? And so he talks about how to purify body, mind, and heart. And what he's really talking about is how to encounter host mind. And he says, finally, when body, mind, and heart have been purified, you will be endowed with serene joy, and touched. You will have gladness. And he says, when one is glad, joy arises. When the mind is joyful, the body is relaxed. When relaxed, one feels content. The mind of the awakened person is, joyful, relaxed, and content. And then he says, a bhikkhu or bhikshuni who has reached this state is without obstacle. And such a person can partake of the choicest rice with all manner of sauces and curries. Isn't that good news? So you can have delicious food, you know. You can live your guest life. You can, you know, put on a nice shirt. You can have a good meal. You can go to the movies. It's okay. You know? So just as a soiled and dirty cloth plunged in clean water becomes pure and clean, so a bhikshu or bhikshuni who has reached this state in virtue, in mental discipline, and wisdom can partake of life to the fullest. So, doesn't that sound good?